When she was just 37 years old, Tiffany Jobe, a wife, mom, and self-proclaimed health nut, was blindsided by her diagnosis with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. Statistically, this prognosis is grim, but Tiffany says that over the past year, she has responded well to molecular targeted therapy, a relatively new field of treatment that is typically more effective than chemo and provides a much better quality of life. Soon after her diagnosis, Tiffany says she told her husband, Nick, that she refused to leave this world without making an impact. Since then, having learned more about the magnitude of cancer's reach, a disease that takes nearly 10 million lives per year, Tiffany says that despite massive progress in recent years, there is still much more that needs to be done. In response, Tiffany and Nick created a nonprofit called 10 for 10 million, which seeks to promote recurring donations in the fixed amount of $10 per month for the 10 million people who pass from cancer each year. Tiffany and her husband, Nick, are here today to tell us more about the amazing mission they're on and the goals they have to support the vitally important research being done at the MD Anderson Cancer Center. Let's take a listen. Okay, so I have with us here today, Nick and Tiffany Jobe with 10 for 10 million. How are you guys?
We're good. How are you doing this
morning? Doing well, thanks.
Great. I'm really happy to have you here and to share more about the incredible mission you're on and the work that you're doing. So let's jump right into it. Last October, Tiffany, as a 37-year-old health nut and non-smoker, you were diagnosed with advanced non-small cell lung cancer. You say that statistically the prognosis is grim. However, the past year, you have responded well to molecular targeted therapy. Can you tell us about that initial diagnosis and how you were thinking or feeling when you first learned that you were battling cancer?
So I went in for a routine bronchoscopy after just having some shortness of breath and a cough. And we were seen by multiple specialists. And after, 5 days? We were told I had cancer. And it had metastasized, so it's stage 4. And we didn't know where the primary tumor was at the time. We just knew that it was cancer. So whenever they had done the bronchoscopy, they had drawn fluid out and stuff. And from my chest tube, they drew fluid from that. And that turned into biomarker testing, which staged my cancer? Or
staged it, but it also gives the primary tumor type, and it tells genetically where the mutation within the cells are occurring. So it's actually really kind of a relatively new wave of cancer diagnosis techniques, but it also helps to dictate the treatment plan.
So that took about a week to get back, and we saw an oncologist in town. She wanted to start us on chemo right away, and thankfully, we have a family friend who was able to help us get into MD Anderson pretty quickly. So within a week, we said, can we go get a second opinion? They were very open to that, which was fantastic. So we went to Houston, and I was seen by an oncologist there, and he was able to pinpoint the primary tumor really quickly with all the information that they had, whereas at the other hospital, they were unable to do that. So my primary tumor was in my right lung. And they were able to just give us more options than where I was first diagnosed. But going back to what you asked about, how did I feel? I was completely shocked, overwhelmed, sad, angry, all the emotions. And, once the initial shock wore off and telling family and close friends what was going on, we just had this come to Jesus moment. We've always been people of faith, but we really just dove into the word and, we just kept reading, through his stripes we are healed. And we just believe in the power of God and his healing. And I just refuse to let this get the best of me. I have way too much to live for. I have my loving husband of almost 14 years. I have 7-year-old twins. I have awesome family, friends, and just too much to lose. So not going down without a fight.
You are incredibly inspiring, as I was just telling you before we hopped on here. And I think that what we're about to get into, telling your story of what you've, how you've taken this really painful circumstance and created into something pretty powerful, is just amazing. So soon after your prognosis, you told your husband that you refused to leave this world without making an impact. And since then, you have learned a lot about the magnitude of cancer's reach, a disease that takes nearly 10 million lives every year. Despite massive progress in recent years, there is still so much more to be done. And that inspired you to create a nonprofit called 10 for 10 million. Can you tell us more about this organization and your non-traditional approach to fundraising?
Absolutely. As you said, about 10 million people die every year of cancer. That's worldwide. But here in the U.S., lung cancer is the leading cause of cancer death, yet only 6% of federal research dollars are spent on lung cancer. So that's not very much at all. And it being the leading cause is, I'm not okay with that. We need more help. So like you said, I said, I refuse to leave this world without making an impact. So that got us to brainstorming. And we came up with the idea of making a nonprofit where it's easy for people to contribute. $10 a month, that's nothing. That's two Starbucks drinks. That's, you know, one trip to Chipotle. I mean, you can sacrifice one or two of those things knowing that your money is going towards a good cause, towards research. And statistically speaking, 1 in 17 men and 1 in 16 women will be diagnosed with lung cancer. So if you look at your social circle, that's easily one person that you know at least. And that's very scary. So why not be proactive now in hopes that we can get more going for the future? So traditional fundraising, typically you're holding galas or fun runs or things that take a lot of people and volunteers and a lot of setup. And eventually we do want to do those things. But right now, just having everybody contribute $10 a month is super doable and it's consistent.
Yeah. One of the things we talked about a lot was how can we break down the barriers to getting people involved so that you could build a community of people who care about fighting cancer before they have cancer or before they know somebody who has cancer. You know, we want to get people involved early on and make it something that they can stay committed to for the rest of their life. You know, one of the things Tiffany and I talk a lot about is, you know, 5 years ago, the treatment that she's on didn't exist. And 5 years from now, the treatment that may be equivalent to a cure or something close to that may exist. And so what if people would have gotten involved earlier? What if the people who donated, you know, the money that led to the research that created this wave of cancer research, what if that had happened 5 years earlier?
Yeah.
You know, what if more awareness was created 5 years ago and Tiffany knew that the, you know, the scratchy cough that she had in her lung could be something more serious, you know? So that's why we want to get people involved early and make it something that they can stay committed to for the long haul and not just a one time, you know, I helped out this year and I've checked that box and I can move on. So
yeah, you guys,
that's the idea.
I have like the chills while you're talking because
you're hitting on certain points that I think are just so important to note about not just the support of the actual research and the disease, but also just the awareness aspect and how together we can make such a huge impact in such a simple way. And what you're doing is really going to motivate people to get on board with that concept, I think. So I love this idea. And I think that it's a great way to tackle your goals. So let's talk about your goal. Your goal is to directly support the MD Anderson Cancer Center at the University of Texas, and more specifically, their Moonshots program. So the program's 13 moonshots are disease-focused initiatives targeting 20 types of cancer. Can you tell us more about how 10 for 10 million will be working to support this program?
Yep. You want me to jump in on that one? Yeah. So I've done a lot of research on the moonshots program at MD Anderson. And MD Anderson is known as being the number one. Actually, in the last 17 years, MD Anderson has been the number one or number two ranked cancer center in the world. And they're known for cancer care and not necessarily for cancer research, which is obviously very important, finding the next wave of treatment and the next, that next breakthrough that's going to change the way that cancer patients are treated. So we started looking into what MD Anderson was doing. We talked to Tiffany's oncologist at depth about what the different clinical trials are and, you know, how we can support those. And it just so happened that they have a clinical trial through their Moonshots program that, actually it's not a clinical trial yet. It's a research program that is specifically geared towards Tiffany's cancer mutation. So it's, to get a little bit technical, it's her mutation that drives her lung cancer is driven by an EGFR mutation, which is a pretty common mutation that drives lung cancer. And the problem with that, the benefit first is that understanding that mutation allows them to create targeted therapies that can address the specific genetic mutation. The problem with that wave of treatment is that it will eventually stop working. And so they know that as a fact, that eventually the mutation will either remutate or develop resistance to the treatment. So one of the Moonshot programs that MD Anderson has is addressing the resistance to those targeted treatments. So if they can tackle that problem, they immediately solve one of the biggest issues with the most advanced wave of cancer research.
Wow.
So MD Anderson sets up these sort of, they call them moonshots because they're looking for a cure and not just for something that helps or, you know, inches things forward, which is pretty typical in the world of cancer research. Pharmaceutical companies are sort of motivated by, you know, creating the next marketable drug, and governments are motivated by more preventing cancer from occurring than they are about curing it, because that's not at this point very realistic. So somebody needs to be taking the long shots and taking the risky, you know, Hail Mary pass. And there aren't a lot of places where that's happening. And so MD Anderson has funding, they have committed donors that they have facilities and researchers all in one place. And so they're able to create these programs that take those long shots and try to go for the big win, you know, to use some cliche terms, but yeah.
That's incredible, because as you're telling me, I'm thinking about how sometimes people get so discouraged about where their donations are going, because it's sometimes just such a broad, you know, whatever, and not to fault any organizations that are huge and don't have very specific detailed programs like this, but to know that your money is going to something that is so specific and that it is so committed to like those bigger end goals, I think you're going to motivate a lot of people to support as well for that reason, because it is so specific.
Yeah, they've been really great. We have a person that we work one-on-one with, and she's been amazing, just helping make sure that we're actually driving the money where our goal is right now. So
that's fantastic.
One of the things you mentioned before we got on this call was, you know, documentaries, they go a long way to telling stories like this. And there's a documentary out there about MD Anderson, or really it's more about an individual who currently works on these moonshot programs. He leads the moonshot program at MD Anderson. His name's Jim Allison. And he won a Nobel Prize for developing the breakthrough that led to the treatment that Tiffany's on now. That was the breakthrough that identified the cell mutation and why your immune system doesn't attack those bad cells, those cancerous cells. And that finding, that breakthrough, led to so many different types of cancer treatments that are saving lives. Tiffany wouldn't be here today without that. That breakthrough. And those breakthroughs are funded by small grassroots efforts like these. These breakthroughs are not funded by large government grants, because government grants and state grants,
they take forever to get.
Yeah, they take a while to formulate, and they're only going to get those if they have results to show. Well, how do you get to the point of results? And so that's what the Moonshots program is intended to do, is create those breakthroughs and those findings that can hopefully lead to more funding down the road, but somebody has to support and fund those programs early on. And that's really the goal of what 10 for 10 million is trying to do.
It's amazing. Amazing. And your mission is to create a significant and sustained source of funding to advance the world's most innovative cancer research and treatment ideas. Despite being the second leading cause of death worldwide, this is speaking to what you were just saying, cancer research receives shockingly little government funding. You know what? I'm going to bypass this question because I just realized we really just answered it.
I do have like a
unless there's something you want to say there.
Well,
yeah.
The only thing I really wanted to hit on that question is, how do I say it? The stigma associated with lung cancer. I'll be honest, I always thought lung cancer just happened to people who smoked, were exposed to a lot of secondhand smoke, and I thought those were the only people who got lung cancer. I didn't realize that it could be a genetic mutation, that it could just happen even if you take the best care of yourself. So a lot of what I want to do as well is educate people, like Nick was saying earlier, getting the word out there that this can happen to anybody. I mean, if you have a set of lungs, you can get lung cancer, you know? So I think just going back to education, early detection, and erasing some of the stigma, because initially I was super embarrassed to tell people that I had lung cancer, because I automatically assumed that that would be their first inkling of why I had it. And I always felt like I had to say, but I'm not a smoker. And I wish it wasn't that way. And I still do feel that way. And I still do get a little bit, but I never smoked. I always feel like I have to explain myself.
Yeah. So it's like an extra added stress
to what you're already dealing with. And I think it's really important that you point that out, because I'm sure that anybody that's been in the same situation has felt that way. And it's tough, because I do think on the other hand, it does like kind of make you want to learn more and be more aware, though, when you hear that you weren't a smoker, because people do just make such assumptions, you know? Exactly. But that does maybe help bring a little bit more awareness to the fact that this could happen to anybody. And it does not mean that it happens because of something that you did.
Right.
That it's happening in response to that. So I think it's really important that you shared that. And through your own unique approach, you're working to utilize the power of social networking to reach a larger audience and tell the story of how small donations make a big impact. Can you tell us more about how you plan to use social media to leverage your mission?
So I've always been an Instagram junkie. I don't know why. I just prefer it over Facebook. I've never done Twitter.
I am too.
I love seeing the pictures and all of that. And so, gosh, a while back I started an Instagram page just for my kids. And then I branched out into one that's public. So I have like a private account and a public account. And I did blog for a while, just random thoughts, fun stuff. And I just had a lot of success from that. And then once I got diagnosed with cancer, and you know, you said you found me through hashtags, that's, I started sharing as many hashtags as I could think about to try to get the word out there. And so, I mean, I will continue to use that. I have my public page, and now we have a 10 for 10 million page where our goal is to keep educating people about this disease. But
I think one of the cool things that we've seen happen since starting 10 for 10 million is just the people that have reached out and the audience that we have, even though it's small right now and we're just getting started, the audience is there because they care about that topic or because they know somebody who's been impacted. So, you know, I think a lot of people feel like social networking, social media platforms are, you know, just superfluous. They're not real relationships. They're not real connections. A lot of people think they're not even real people behind those accounts, but that's probably
true.
And
there are some, yeah. We all know that.
The people we've met through this, through Instagram mostly, and other social media platforms too, but mostly through Instagram, they're real people. They're facing real problems. They have maybe also been diagnosed or have a loved one that's been diagnosed with something similar. So.
The community that I've found on Instagram has been amazing. I've had, numerous people reach out and say, oh, I just got diagnosed, or my mom has that, my dad has that. Or I've had several who, you know, their parents have passed away. I have one really great friend through social media that just, November was Lung Cancer Awareness Month. She runs a small business. All her profit she sent to us.
Oh, for my 10 gosh. For 10
million. I mean, it's just such a great community. And whenever I post about our trips to Houston and stuff, I always get a huge inpouring of support. And I'm so grateful for it. It keeps me going. It keeps me motivated.
That, I think social media tends to be such a great connector around these type of topics too, especially when you have, you know, maybe a rare form of something, or, you know, that people need to feel that they have community and support. And that's just such a great way to do it. But also in terms of your fundraising, I think like social media is such a great way to connect with people, because that's how I found you, you know? Yeah. And I read it and was like, yeah, $10. Absolutely. That makes sense. Like, that's easy. Right. And, you know, so I'm hopeful for you guys that that will really be a great way for you to, you know, take off on your fundraising too. Yeah.
Thank you.
And what, just one more thing about the social networking, and the thing that's kind of fascinating to me, you know, we're supporting programs at MD Anderson, which is a huge institution. You know, they have their own social media, they have their own marketing department, and they spend millions of dollars on marketing. And so a lot of people have asked us, well, why don't I just give my money to MD Anderson directly? Or, you know, what are you doing that's different, you know, to get the word out? And that's fine with us too. If you, you know, if you want to give your money directly to them, it's just, it's all the same, because we direct 100% of the proceeds of what we take directly to MD Anderson. But the circles that we've created, the networking channels that we have, are going to be different than what MD Anderson can reach. And so even if it's only 10 different people that would not have found MD Anderson or wanted to contribute to MD Anderson, that's 10 more people who now know about the cause and cancer and why it's important. And so I think that's why social media or social networking is important, is because one connection can lead to potentially millions of other people who wouldn't have known about that or wouldn't have seen it. So the way that the networking channels work is, you know, the more people that are out there talking about it, the better. So we feel like we can bring a lot more awareness and a lot more financial resources to MD Anderson just by kind of having different channels and different networks.
Absolutely. That's a great point too, about who you're reaching. And even just in my audience here, you know, I'm based in Philadelphia, and you've got people listening from all over the place. Like, that's, you're getting in the ear of people who might not otherwise have any reason to connect to MD Anderson.
Right.
You know, we've heard of it, and like, there are MD Anderson, I think, you know, satellite sites around here, right. But, just the fact that you're giving such a personal touch to it, I think goes a long way in terms of getting people involved and wanting to support that particular institution.
Absolutely.
So you say the cancer does not discriminate and that it can find you at any age, at any stage of life. What would you say is the best advice you could offer to anyone who's been recently diagnosed with cancer or who has a family member who's battling cancer?
I know I said it earlier, but we are people of faith, and that is really what I just leaned on the most and still do every day. But reach out for support, search the hashtags, Google, which isn't always great, but Google, you know, find your support system, those people around you. We are so blessed to live in a neighborhood where our neighbors are phenomenal. They help us in the drop of a hat. You know, our family has been absolutely incredible. We go to Houston every 3 weeks, and my parents and his parents are constantly taking care of our kids. And I'm so thankful for that. But I think another thing is I just try to live my life as normal as possible. I do everything that I used to do. I'm still committed to working out, very committed to eating right. spending time with my family, with my kids, creating memories. We discussed this prior to the podcast, but we're about to take our kids skiing. I mean, we got a little pebble thrown our way last week or 2 weeks ago. My lung collapsed, so that took flying off the table. So now we're driving. We just rerouted. I mean, that's a lot of our life now. It's curveballs, and we just go with the flow. So
yeah.
And that leads me into my next question, because it really is so inspiring how driven you are
to do exactly what you just said, to live the life, your life, just as you normally would, while you're battling something so heavy. But you say that this cancer diagnosis does not define you and you refuse to let it, but it does drive you. So can you tell us how this diagnosis is really driving you?
I just have too much to live for. I mean, we had a very hard time having kids. So when we finally had the twins, I mean, it is such a huge blessing, and one that I don't take lightly. I want to be there for them. I want to watch them grow up. I want to see them go to college and get married and have kids. And I know some of that may not be attainable, but I want to be here being their mom for as long as I can, being Nick's wife for as long as I can, being my parents' daughter for as long as I can. You know, I don't have any brothers or sisters, so.
But it sounds like you have an incredible support system around you, and that's,
we're very fortunate. And I know that
so wonderful.
That's probably not the case for everybody, but you know, seek and you shall find.
Yeah, yeah, and that's, you know, on this podcast we talk a lot about compassion and community, because they're just two topics that are very important to me, but also I find that they're very important to when we're talking about these important causes or people who are struggling with something so significant. Can you tell us how important you think those aspects, compassion and community, are to those who are battling cancer and in regard to supportive research and therapies?
Yeah, we've discussed it at length. Like, compassion is being able to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. And with cancer, that's really difficult to do. You know, you want to empathize with people, and there's only so much you can do unless you're in it, because the day-to-day thought process, yes, I live every day to its fullest, which all of us should do, regardless of, you know, if you have cancer or not. But putting yourself in somebody with cancer's shoes is just, it's a different mindset. My brain is always thinking like this, I don't know, it can go negative. Like, my brain is just always thinking about how I'm feeling and did I take my medicine, and just the thought process behind that is.
Yeah, I think if you can put yourself in somebody else's shoes and think about if that was your loved one, or if that was even you that was battling that, you know, would you think differently about how you supported that person or the entire cause behind cancer research? I think everybody would, if they really could feel what Tiffany feels and, you know, what I feel as the father of her kids and as her wife or her husband. Just putting yourself in those shoes and the shoes of somebody who really feels this every single day, changes the way that people act. It changes actions. And, you know, that's, again, getting back to the mission of our nonprofit, is like making people aware and telling her, just by telling her story, I think we're hoping that maybe somebody out there will put themselves in her shoes or my shoes, and maybe they'll change the way that they
live their life. Maybe they are a smoker. Maybe, you know, it'll open that thought process. But, you know, when people are compassionate towards you, that's part of building your community, because those are the people who are on your side. Those are the people who have your back, who are invested in you. And that's also what we're hoping to do, is, you know, get people who are invested in making a difference and potentially changing the world, really.
Yeah.
But we talk a lot about 10 for 10 million being a community, that it's not just an organization. It's not just a fundraising organization. We want it to be a community. And right now it's a really small community that's mostly comprised of just our close friends and family, the people who, you know, we reached out to initially, but hopefully that will grow through social networking and through awesome podcasts and other channels like this one. But there are, once that community is built, it makes everything else that we're trying to do so much easier. And not just raising money. Obviously, raising money is easier to do when you have a strong community. But, you know, planning events and the things that we're not doing right now, because we want to get things up and running and established. But, you know, it's events and getting people pulled together to help others. All of those things, the entire journey becomes easier when you have a dedicated community. It's not just people who are, you know, liking posts or, you know, saying that they follow you. It's people who are committed and engaged and, you know, have an interest in what you're trying to do. So that's the community that we're trying to build.
It's awesome. And by sharing, you know, so freely as you guys have today, I think that is exactly what you're going to do, is touch people who aren't yet in your community, but who are going to want to become a part of your community to support, you know, the amazing work that you're doing and for such a personal reason. And, you know, I love that you say this. I read this, I think, on your website, Tiffany, but you say that above all, the message you want to spread is that we are all on borrowed time. Mm-hmm. Live freely and choose happiness, and don't wait till it's too late to contribute to something that's so important. And that is such a powerful message. So I want you to talk to us about, aside from donations, which are obviously critical to your efforts, what are some other ways that myself or those listening can best support you with your ongoing efforts?
I think sharing our story is going to help a lot. Just, you know, doing the compassionate thing, putting yourself in somebody else's shoes and just seeing potentially what that life could be like, you know, to help build the community and spread the word. Because if you read one thing, sometimes it just sticks in your mind, and then something will come up and you're like, what was that? And it triggers something. And then maybe that's that thing. Maybe it's, oh, that girl had that cough for a while. I have a cough. What was that about? Google it. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, finding something that you're passionate about, and then whether it's cancer research or cancer fundraising or not, maybe it's something else, but yeah. You know, I'm obviously passionate about cancer research and awareness now. I wish 10 years ago I was a lot more passionate about it, mm-hmm. and that I had done something more to advance things, because now, you know, it's not too late, but it's, you know, I'm behind the eight ball now, and I wish I would have done more earlier in life, and not just around the area of cancer research and fundraising. There are other things that, you know, when you think about life the way that Tiffany does now and the way that I do now, you know, you realize that we're all on borrowed time, and that life can be really short. You know, you think a little bit differently about the things that you would have done. And so that's, I think, the message that we're trying to get out too, is that act now while you can, and while you have the ability and, you know, hopefully the resources and the time to make the most out of your life, and not just in selfish ways, you know, not just to have fun and live life every day, which, yeah, everybody should do that too, but also act now to make a difference, and may benefit yourself, or it may benefit a loved one. But even if it doesn't, you're helping somebody by getting involved now.
Yeah. And that, just the fact that you're giving people such an easy opportunity right now to get involved, and it's so accessible to be able to say like $10 a month, and, you know, do that continually. Lock in now and say, I'm doing $10 a month ongoing. You know, you're not even going to miss that $10, but you're going to know every single day that you are invested in something that's making a difference in someone else's life, or to your point, potentially your own life or the life of a loved one, and how simple that is to do, to take the steps to make that happen today.
Absolutely.
Make a change. Yeah.
One of the things we're going to be doing soon is the doctors that we're working with at MD Anderson have offered to tell one of the pieces of this story that I think are really important. And that's about how small actions, small donations make such a huge impact. And they've seen that their entire careers firsthand. One of the doctors actually in the 1970s created one of the breakthroughs, or helped advance one of the breakthroughs that's helping Tiffany and millions of other patients now. And he has a really interesting story about how you know, small changes, small donations created the ability to get those programs off the ground. So
even where they are now, it's helped with what we're doing. So
it's really, that just speaks so well to exactly what you're trying to accomplish here. And I will say that to everyone listening, I plan on getting off this call and signing up for my $10 a month as soon as we're done. And I'm going to encourage everybody that's listening to do the same, because it is that simple and you are making a significant impact in not just someone's life, but hopefully the 10 million lives of people who are affected by this every single year. And so lastly, can you tell us, just list the places where everyone can connect with you and how they can continue to follow along with your organization and your mission?
So 10for10million.org is the website, and it's spelled out, not the numbers. And then our Instagram handle is at 10for10million_org. And then Facebook is at 10for10million.com or 10for10million. So that's all we are now. I don't know if I'll ever get on the Twitter.
You don't need to. I mean, honestly, the fact that if you stay so committed in certain areas, it really can make such a, and I know this just from my own experience, like sometimes if you spread yourself in too many different lanes, mm-hmm. it gets overwhelming and then you can't focus on so much what you want to, but that's great. People can follow you on Instagram, Facebook, or they can go directly to your site. And I encourage everyone to go to the site, donate today, make that commitment. And I wish you guys nothing but the absolute best of luck, because I think that you are going to make a significant impact in the long-term effects of people who are dealing with cancer diagnosis and cancer treatment. And I just want to say thank you so much for being so honest and open and sharing your story with us today.
Well, thank you. Thank you for giving us the opportunity. I mean, we really appreciate it. The more we can educate and spread the word, the better.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Be the Good Podcast. Please like, comment, and share, and be sure to follow us on Instagram at Be the Good Podcast. And remember, we can all find our own way to be the good.